or gray instead of black. The metal walls of the stall dividers looked flimsy, and Charlie had a sudden vision of Bonnie, larger than life, grabbing the metal frame with his paws and ripping it up from the ground, the bolts tearing right out of the floor. She banished the thought and ran into the farthest stall from the door, slipping the lock, so small it looked almost delicate, into place. She sat on top of the toilet tank, her feet pulled up onto the seat and her back pressed against the blue tile wall of the bathroom. In the empty room, Charlie could hear her own breath echoing. She forced it to slow and closed her eyes, telling herself to be silent, to hide.
Charlie?
John was still pounding on the little door of the control room.
Charlie, what's going on out there?
Jessica sat quietly, still rattled from the screams and crashes outside.
She can take care of herself,
John said, easing his grip on the door.
Yeah,
Jessica said. He did not turn around to look at her.
We have to get out of here, John said.
He rattled the door again. The top swayed a little as he pulled, but the bottom was stuck fast. He hunched down farther. There was a lock, a deadbolt that dropped straight into the floor. The latch to pull it open had broken off long ago, leaving only a jagged ledge so thin he could scarcely get his fingers around it. As he yanked it upward, it cut into his fingers, leaving thin red lines. The bolt stayed fast in place.
Jessica, you try, he said, turning to look at her.
Her eyes were on the wall of televisions. They were all showing static, but every now and then one flashed a picture.
Never mind, John said. Keep watching.
He bent his head again and went back to the deadbolt. In the bathroom, Charlie was silent. She paid attention to each breath she took, each inhale and exhale a slow, deliberate process. She had tried meditating once. She had hated it. But now the intense focus on her breathing was calming.
I guess I just needed the right motivation, she thought. Like staying alive.
The stalls rattled briefly, and there was a distant booming sound that went on for several seconds.
It's storming outside.
She kept her eyes trained on the floor. The light overhead was so dim it scarcely illuminated her stall. She held her breath. The light flickered and let out a brief hum, then was silent. The toilet tank she sat on felt unstable. She scooted to the edge of it to quietly let her foot down. Just as the tip of her shoe touched the tile, the wide bathroom doors opened with a thunderous bang. Without thinking, she jerked her foot up, and the lid of the porcelain tank clanged like pots clattering together. She held herself perfectly still, her shoe suspended in the air, then carefully pulled her foot back into place on top of the toilet seat.
That was too loud, she thought.
Carefully, she leaned forward and reached up with one hand to grasp the stall divider. She pulled herself up to stand slowly, the toilet seat rocking on its hinges beneath her feet. She peered out over the top at the two stalls next to her. It was too dark to see beyond the metal stalls, and the whole row of them swayed gently from her weight. There was a shuffling sound. Something wide and heavy was sliding across the floor, not trying nearly as hard as she was to be quiet. Her eyes darted from the stall door beside her to the bathroom door. The shuffling continued, but she could not tell where it was coming from. The sound filled the room. Suddenly, the nebulous sound resolved. It was crisp, and it was nearby. The wall she clung to trembled slightly. She panned her gaze around the room, hoping her eyes would adjust a little more. She could make out a trash can by the door and the outline of the sinks. Apprehensively, she looked back at the door of her stall, letting her focus creep along the edges until she set her eyes on the inch-wide gap along the door. A large plastic eye stared back, unblinking and dry, fixed directly on her. Two large and unnatural rabbit ears hung over the top of the door. Charlie clasped her hand over her mouth and jumped to the floor as fast as she could, dropping to her stomach and scooting along the floor into the second stall. She heard Bonnie rattle the door of the stall she had just left, but the shuffling feet did not move. She crawled under the next divider and into the stall nearest the entrance. This time her foot bumped the toilet behind her, and the lip dropped down with a loud clank. Charlie froze. The shuffling thing did not move. For what felt like an age, Charlie held her breath. He heard. He must have heard. But Bonnie still made no sound. Charlie held still and listened, waiting for another sound of movement to mask her own. Her breathing seemed louder than before. She lowered her head, trying to make out shapes along the floor. The shuffling sound resumed, and now, without warning, it was directly in front of her. She held her breath, desperately trying to make out any forms in the darkness. There he is. A large padded foot was just outside the door, as if it had stopped mid-step. Is he leaving? Please leave, Charlie pleaded. There was a new sound, stiff fabric, softly crunching. What is that? The foot outside the door had not moved. The noise grew louder, the sound of fabric and fur twisting and stretching, tearing and popping. What is that? Charlie dug into the floor with her nails, holding down a guttural scream. He's bending over. A large paw touched down gently in front of her, then another shape, the creature's head. It was massive, filling the space under the door. Gracefully, Bonnie lowered himself to the floor and turned his head sideways until his eye met Charlie's. His giant mouth was open wide with a ghoulish excitement, as though he had found someone in a game of hide-and-seek. A warm burst of air rolled in under the stall door. Breath? Charlie clasped her hand over her nose and mouth. The stench was unbearable. Another wave of it hit her face, hotter and more putrid. She closed her eyes, on the point of relinquishing the hope of escape. Maybe if she kept her eyes closed long enough, she would wake up. Another gust of hot air hit, and she jerked back, hitting the back of her head on the toilet. She recoiled with pain and threw her arm in front of her, shielding her face against attack. No attack came. She opened one eye. Where is he? Suddenly, the metal walls around her swayed with a resounding bang. Charlie startled and covered her head as Bonnie struck again. The stalls rocked on their legs, and the bolts screeched as they were yanked free from the floor, the whole assembly seeming ready to collapse. Charlie scrambled under the last divider and climbed to her feet, grasping for the door handle to pull it shut as she ran out. She ran back into the main dining area, darting toward the control room. Her eyes no longer adjusted to the light. She ran with her hands in front of her, unable to see farther than her next steps. John! She cried, grabbing the doorknob and yanking at it, pushing. Nothing happened. Charlie! It's stuck! John shouted back from inside. As Charlie struggled with the door, she glanced up at the stage. Chica was gone. John! Charlie shouted in desperation. Without waiting for a response, Charlie took off again, running for a hall to her left, trying to get as much distance from the bathroom as possible. The hall was almost completely dark, and as she ran, open doorways yawned at her with wide, black mouths. Charlie did not stop to look inside any of them, instead only praying that nothing jumped out at her. She reached the last door and paused for a brief moment, hoping against hope that it would be unlocked. She grabbed the knob and twisted. Thankfully, it fell open easily. She slid through the door, then closed it rapidly, trying not to make a sound. She stood watching the door for a long moment, half expecting it to be flung open, and then finally she turned. It was only then that she saw him. Carlton was there. His eyes widened in surprise when he saw her, but he did not move, and after her eyes adjusted to the dim light, she understood. He was trapped, wedged somehow into the top half of one of the animatronic suits, his head poking out from the wide shoulders of the costume. His face was white and exhausted, and Charlie knew why. The spring locks. She heard her father's voice for a moment. It could snap off your nose.
Carlton? Charlie said cautiously, as if her voice alone might set off the mechanisms.
Yup,
he said with the same faltering tone.
That costume is going to kill you if you move.
Thanks, he wheezed, half attempting a laugh. Charlie forced a smile.
Well, today is your lucky day. I'm probably the only person who knows how to get you out of that thing alive.
Carlton exhaled a long and shaky breath.
Lucky me, he said.
Charlie knelt at his side, studying the costume for long moments without touching it.
These two spring locks at the neck aren't holding anything back, she said at last. He just rigged them to snap and pierce your throat if you try to move. I have to undo those first, and then we can open the back of the costume and get you out. But you can't move, Carlton, seriously.
Yeah, serial killer man explained the not moving to me, he said.
Charlie nodded and went back to looking at the costume, trying to devise an approach.
Do you know who I'm wearing?
Carlton asked, almost casually.
What?
The costume. Do you know what character it was supposed to be?
Charlie studied it, then looked around until she saw the matching head.
No, she said. Not everything he built made it to the stage.
Her fingers suddenly stopped working.
Carlton?
Charlie carefully surveyed the array of costumes and parts that lined the walls in varying stages of completion.
Carlton, she repeated. Is he in here?
With a new sense of dread, Carlton struggled to get a look behind him without moving.
I don't know, he whispered. I don't think so, but I've been kind of in and out.
Okay, stop talking. I'll try to work fast, Charlie said.
She had the mechanism figured out, or at least she thought she did.
Not too fast, Carlton reminded her.
Carefully, slowly, she reached into the costume's neck and took hold of the first spring lock, maneuvering it until her fingers were wedged between the lock and Carlton's neck.
Careful with that artery. I've had it since I was a kid, Carlton said.
Shh,
Charlie whispered. When Carlton spoke, she could feel his neck move. He was not going to set off the locks by talking, she thought, but the feeling of his tendons moving under her hands was unsettling.
Okay, he whispered. Sorry, I talk when I'm nervous.
He clamped down his jaw and bit his lips together. Charlie reached down farther into the costume's neck and found the trigger. With a stinging snap, the lock sprang against her hand, so hard that it numbed her fingers.
One down, she thought as she pulled it, harmless, out of the neck of the costume.
She flexed her fingers until the feeling came back into them, then crawled over to Carlton's other side and began the process again. She looked over her shoulder from time to time, making sure every costume was still in its place against the wall. His skin was warm under her touch, and even though he was not speaking, she could still feel movement, feel the life in him. She could feel his pulse against the back of her wrist as she worked, and she blinked back unexpected tears. She swallowed hard and focused on the task, trying to ignore the fact that she was touching someone who would die if she failed him. She worked open the spring lock again, taking the impact on the palm of her hand and pulling the disabled device free of the costume. Carlton took a deep breath in, and she startled.
Carlton, don't relax!
He stiffened and exhaled slowly, his eyes wide and frightened.
Right, he said. Still a death trap.
Stop talking, Charlie pleaded again.
She knew exactly how much danger he was still in, and she could not bear to hear him speak now if he was about to die.
Okay, she said. Almost there.
She crawled around behind him, where a series of 10 leather and metal fasteners held the back of the costume together. She considered it for a moment. She needed to keep the costume still, exactly as it was, until the last moment. She sat down behind him and bent her knees,
positioning herself so that she could hold the costume in place with her legs as she opened it.
"I didn't know you cared," Carlton muttered as though attempting to put a joke together, but too tired and too scared to finish it.
Charlie didn't answer. One by one, she worked the fasteners free. The leather was stiff, the metal tightly fitted, and each one fought back as she worked, clinging together. When she was halfway up the back of the costume, she felt its weight begin to shift. She gripped it tighter with her knees, holding it together. Finally, she undid the last one at the nape of his neck. She took a deep breath. This was it.
"Okay, Carlton," she said. "We're almost done. I'm going to open this and throw it forward. When I do, you pull out of it as fast as you can, okay? One, two, three."
She yanked the costume open and thrust it away with all her strength, and Carlton jerked back from it, toppling roughly into her. Charlie felt a sharp, quick pain on the back of her hand as she pulled free, but the costume skittered halfway across the room, leaving them clear. A series of snaps sounded, making a noise like fireworks, and they both cried out, leaping back and banging into a heavy metal shelf. Together, they watched as the empty costume writhed and twisted across the floor, the animatronic parts snapping violently into place. When it came to a stop, Charlie stared, fixated. The thing was just a torso, just an object. Beside her, Carlton let out a low, pained groan, then turned and vomited onto the floor beside him, heaving and retching like he would be turned inside out. Charlie watched, unsure what to do. She put a hand on his shoulder and kept it there as he finished, wiped his mouth, and sat gasping for breath.
"Are you okay?" she said,
the words sounding small and ridiculous. Carlton nodded wearily, then winced.
"Yeah, I'm fine," he said. "Sorry about the floor. I guess it's your floor, kind of."
"You might have a concussion," Charlie said, alarmed, but he shook his head, moving more slowly this time.
"No, I don't think so," he said. "My head hurts like somebody hit it really hard, and I feel sick from being stuck in this room and pondering my death for hours. But I think I'm okay. My mind is okay."
"Okay," Charlie said doubtfully. Then something he had said finally registered. "Carlton, you said serial killer man explained for you not to move. You saw who did this to you?" Carlton got to his knees carefully, then stood, bracing himself on a nearby box. He looked at Charlie.
"I was trapped in that thing for hours. I'm all tingly."
He shook out his foot as if to make the point. "Did you see who it was?" Charlie repeated.
"Dave, the guard," Carlton said.
He sounded almost surprised that she did not know. Charlie nodded. She had known already.
"What did he tell you?"
"Not much," Carlton said.
"But..."
His eyes opened suddenly, as if he had just remembered something of grave importance. He looked away from Charlie and slowly dropped to his knees.
"What is it?"
Charlie whispered.
"Do you want to hear?" he said.
He seemed suddenly calm for someone who had so narrowly escaped death.
"What is it?"
she demanded. He glanced nervously at her for a moment, then took a deep breath, his face draining to white.
"Charlie, the kids, all those years ago."
Charlie snapped to attention.
"What?" "All of them, Michael and the others. They were taken from the dining room when no one was looking, and they were brought here."
Carlton suddenly recoiled and moved toward the doorway, watching the walls as though they were crawling with invisible creatures.
"He, Dave, the guard, he brought them here."
Carlton rubbed his arms like he was suddenly cold and squinted in pain.
"He put them into suits, Charlie," he said, his face twisting in sorrow or disgust. "Charlie."
He stopped abruptly, a faraway look in his eyes.
They are still here.
How do you know that?
Charlie said in such a soft whisper that she was almost inaudible. Carlton motioned toward the far corner of the room. Charlie looked. A yellow Freddy costume was propped against the wall. The costume all fitted together, as if he were about to walk on stage for a show.
That's the one. That's the bear I remember from the other restaurant.
Charlie clasped her hand over her mouth.
Other restaurant?
Carlton looked puzzled.
I don't understand.
Charlie's gaze was still fixed on the yellow costume.
Carlton, I don't understand.
Her tone was urgent.
Michael.
Charlie stared at him.
Michael?
What do you mean? She said in a level voice.
I know how it sounds, he said,
and then his voice dropped to a whisper.
Charlie, I think it's Michael in that suit.
I still can't get this thing out.
John sighed in frustration and rubbed his hand. The lock was leaving harsh red imprints on his fingers. Jessica murmured something sympathetic, but she did not take her eyes off the screens.
I can't see anything, she burst out after a moment.
The radio squawked, and then Marla's voice came, calling to them from the control room in Pirate's Cove.
Both of you, be quiet and don't move.
They froze, hunching down in their places. Jessica looked at John, a question in her eyes, but he shrugged, as at a loss as she was. Something thudded against the door. John jumped away, almost falling.
Marla?
Jessica said with a pale expression.
Marla, that's you out there, right?
The thud came again, more powerful than before, and the door shook under it.
What is that? A sledgehammer?
John whispered hoarsely. The door pounded in again and again, dents appearing in the metal door, which had looked so solid. They huddled back against the control panel with nothing to do but watch. Jessica grabbed the back of John's shirt, knotting the cloth between her fingers, and he did not shake her away. The door rocked in again, and this time a hinge unfolded slightly, exposing a thin crack between the door and the frame. The door still held, but it would not hold for long. John felt Jessica's fingers tighten on his shirt. He wanted to turn and give her some kind of comfort, but he was mesmerized, unable to look away. He could almost see out through the little open space, and he craned his neck. Another blow came. The crack widened, and on the other side, he saw eyes peering in, calm and expressionless.
Get out! Get out!
Marla shouted, waving her hands at the security monitor as if John and Jessica could see her, as if it would do any good if they could. Lamar had both hands clapped over his mouth, his eyes wide, and Jason was sitting on the floor, waiting nervously as though an attack on their own door might begin at any moment. The monitors were dark, but it was clear that something large was lurking in front of the main stage, a black, static shape that prowled back and forth, momentarily blocking the entire picture.
Marla,
Lamar whispered, hoping to quiet her.
Marla, look.
He pointed to the monitor showing Pirate's Cove, just outside their door. Marla looked over his shoulder at the other screen. The curtain was pulled back, and the space was completely empty. The out-of-order sign hung perfectly straight across the platform, untouched.
The lock. We didn't...
Marla said feebly, realizing now the magnitude of their mistake. Marla turned to Jason, then let out a panicked whimper. The door behind him was slowly opening.
Shh.
Lamar quickly flipped a small switch, killing the light in the control room, and backed against the wall next to the door. Marla and Jason mimicked his motions, flattening themselves against the wall across from him. The monitors still flickered with static, illuminating the space in oscillating grays and the occasional flash of white. The small door creaked outward at an excruciating pace, a gaping black void widening until the door stopped,
fully open.
Marla!
A static-laced voice called from somewhere on the floor. Lamar shot out his foot across the narrow carpet, trying to catch the walkie-talkie.
Shh, shh.
Marla closed her eyes, pleading in her mind for Jessica to stop talking.
Marla, where are you?
Jessica's voice called again. Lamar managed to flip the walkie-talkie onto its side, and with a click, it went silent. He didn't know if he had jostled a battery out of place or somehow managed to flip the switch, but it didn't matter. There was nowhere to hide in the tiny room. The ceiling was too low to stand, and even with their backs against the wall, their legs stretched under the doorframe. The ledge under the door was high enough to hide their legs from anything outside, but not from anything that managed to get in. As one, they stopped breathing. The room was no longer empty. Something was entering the space. As it pressed forward into the room, they saw a snout and the scratchy gloss of two unblinking eyes staring straight ahead. The monstrous head threatened to fill the room.
Foxy,
Jason mouthed, making no sound. The plastic eyes clicked left and right with unnatural motions, searching but not seeing. The jaw twitched as though about to open, but never did. The dim light from the monitors gave his face a reddish hue, leaving the rest of him shrouded in darkness. His head slowly moved backward, his ears moving up and down at random, programmed as an afterthought a decade before. As Foxy backed away, his eyes thrashed back and forth, one partially hidden under a rotting eye patch. Marla held her breath, dreading the moment when the eyes would fix on her. The head was almost out the door when the eyes clicked to the right and found Marla. The head stopped, its jaw frozen, slightly open. The plastic eyes remained on Marla, who sat in terrified silence. After a moment, the head retreated, leaving a black and empty space. Jason darted forward to find the door outside and shut it, and Marla made a weak grab at him, trying to stop him. He brushed past her, then stopped, kneeling in the doorway. He looked into the darkness, only now afraid of what must be there. He crawled slowly forward, his torso disappearing temporarily as he reached outside for the doorknob, then pulled himself back in and gently closed the door. Marla and Lamar closed their eyes and let out a deep breath at the same time. Jason looked at them. He was almost smiling when, in a blur, the door burst open again and an ugly metal hook sank into his leg. He screamed in pain. Marla leaped to grab him, but she was too slow. She watched helplessly as Jason was dragged through the doorway.
Marla!
He cried, clawing futilely at the floor, and she howled in despair as he was taken from her again. Nothing visible of his assailant but the awful glimmer of the hook. Marla dove toward the door after him, falling to her knees and crawling toward the thing, but Lamar grabbed her shoulder and yanked her back, taking hold of the door. Before he could pull it shut, it was ripped from his hands with an inhuman strength. Suddenly, Foxy was there before them, coming inside. He was full of life, a different creature, and he turned to look at Marla, his silver eyes appearing to comprehend. His face was a canine rictus, the scrappy orange fur insufficient to cover up his skull. He looked between them, turning his ghoulish smile first on Lamar, then on Marla. His eyes flared and dimmed, and he snapped his jaws with a sound like something breaking. They stared, backed up against the control panel, and then Lamar realized suddenly what he was looking at.
"He can't fit all the way in," he whispered.
Marla looked. It was true. Foxy's shoulders were jammed in the doorway, his head the only part he could wedge through the door. Lamar lunged forward and kicked the animatronic, bracing himself against the wall and striking out with his foot three times before Foxy gave a low whine, a sound more machine than animal, and slunk back out into the dark. Lamar snapped the door shut behind him and slid the deadbolt into place. They stared at each other for a long moment, breathing hard.
Jason!
Marla screamed. Lamar put his arms around her. She let him hug her, but she did not cry, just closed her eyes.
What do you mean it's Michael in the suit? Charlie said softly, as if she might be talking to someone who had gone mad, while also desperate to hear the answer.
Carlton looked at the yellow bear for a long moment, and when he turned back to Charlie, his face was calm. He opened his mouth to speak, and Charlie put a finger to her lips. Something was coming. She could hear footsteps out in the hall, moving toward them. Deliberate, heavy steps, the approach of someone who did not mind if anyone heard. Charlie looked wildly around the room and spotted a pipe in a corner. She grabbed it and hurried to stand behind the door, where whoever opened it would not see her. Carlton picked up the torso, as though to use it as a weapon somehow. He looked confused, like he was not thinking clearly.
Don't,
Charlie warned in a low voice, but she was too late. Something snapped inside the suit. Carlton dropped it and stepped back, a shimmer of blood on his hand.
Are you okay?
Charlie whispered. He nodded, and then the doorknob turned. Dave appeared in the doorway, his head held high and his face grim. It should have been imposing, but he just looked like a man walking through a door. Now you've done it, he announced to the room in general. Then his eyes lit on Carlton, unfettered. His face darkened. Before he could move, Charlie raised the pipe high, stepped forward, and swung it down on his head with a sickening thunk. Dave turned, shock on his face. Charlie lifted the pipe, ready to attack again, but the man just stumbled backward against the wall and dropped into a sitting position.
Carlton, come on!
Charlie said urgently, but he was looking down at his injured hand.
Carlton, are you hurt?
No, he said, shaking off his reverie and wiping his hand clean with his black shirt.
Come on,
Charlie said firmly, taking his arm.
Come on, we have to get out of here. I don't know how long he'll stay out.
You're awfully calm for just having knocked a guy out cold, she thought wryly. They crept out into the empty hallway, lit only by the dim glow of light from the other rooms. Charlie hustled them through the swinging doors to the kitchen, where the dark was total. The air was thick with a blackness that was almost tangible. It was as if they had been swallowed. She turned to look at Carlton, but only the faint sound of his breathing told her that he was still beside her. Something touched her arm, and she stifled a scream.
It's just me, Carlton hissed, and she let out a sigh. Let's just make sure that we aren't being followed, then we can find the others and get out of here, she whispered.
Charlie glanced back at the door, and the last spots of light peeking under it. She scooted herself a little closer to it, and got to her feet to peer through the round window, careful not to touch it.
What do you see? Carlton whispered. Nothing. I think it's safe.
Just as she finished speaking, a form passed by, darkening the window. Charlie jumped back, almost falling over Carlton. They stumbled forward, rushing to get away from the door. Suddenly, two beams split the darkness, illuminating the room in a harsh yellow light. Chica loomed there, almost on top of them. She stretched up to her full height, growing taller still.
She must have been hiding here all along, Charlie thought.
The dark recesses of the kitchen could be hiding anything. Chica looked at both of them in turn, the beams of light shifting dizzyingly as her eyes snapped mechanically from one side to the other. Then she paused, and Charlie grabbed Carlton's arm.
Run!
She screamed, and they took off, looping around the prep table, the metal furniture clattering as they rushed clumsily past it. Behind them, Chica's steps were long and slow. At last they reached the door, and they burst out into the hall and ran for the main dining room. John and Jessica were silent, listening to the clamor outside. John was resting his hand on the door of the control room. Whatever had been on the other side was gone, or at least was pretending to be. The lock had been wrenched out of the floor. John tried the knob, but the door, twisted out of shape, still stuck.
"Are you crazy?"
Jessica exclaimed, alarmed. "What else are we going to do?" John said calmly. Jessica didn't answer. John backed up against the control panel and gave the door a calculated kick, moving it an inch closer to opening.
"Here, let me,"
Jessica said, and before he could reply, she had delivered a kick of her own, the door again moving just a little. They took turns, not speaking, until finally John kicked and the top hinge broke. John quickly wrestled the door the rest of the way off until they could crawl out. They hurried out and stopped, exposed in the main dining room. Jessica looked at the main stage in misery. It was empty.
"I don't know how this is safer," she said, but John was not listening.
"Charlie,"
he cried, then covered his mouth with his hand. Too late. Charlie and Carlton were running from the dark hallway at a furious pace.
"Come on!"
Charlie yelled at them, not slowing down as she passed, and John and Jessica ran after them as Charlie led them out of the dining room into the opposite hall, toward the storeroom they had come in through. Charlie ran down the hall with a purpose, stopping in front of a closed door and trying to get it open. Behind them loomed the open mouth of a pitch-black party room, a wide, empty space that could have hidden anything. John turned his back to the group, keeping an eye on the abyss.
"Is it locked?"
Carlton asked, an edge of rising panic in his voice.
"No, just stuck,"
Charlie said. She forced it, and the door popped open. They hurried inside, John lingering until the last moment, his eyes still on the darkness behind him. When the door was shut, Charlie reached for the light switch by the door, but John put a hand on her arm.
"Don't turn the light on," he said, looking back for a moment. "We have enough light. Let your eyes adjust."
There was a window high up on the door, thick glass with a bubbling frosted pattern that let a trickle of light and color into the room from the hallway.
"Right,"
Charlie said. A light on in here would have marked them out clearly. In the semi-darkness, she surveyed the room. It had been an office, though not one she remembered visiting often. She was not sure who had used it. There were cartons here and there on the floor, overstuffed to bulging with papers, their lids perched sheepishly on top of the mess inside. There was an old desk in the corner, a grayish-blue metal with visible dents in the surface. Jessica boosted herself up to sit on it.
"Lock the door,"
Jessica said in an irritated tone, and Charlie did. There was a button set into the knob, which she knew would be useless, and a flimsy bolt lock, the kind in bathroom stalls and on picket fences.
"I guess it's better than nothing," she said.
Chapter 11. They sat silently for a few minutes in the little office, everyone eyeing the door, waiting.
"It's just another place to be trapped," Charlie thought. "We have to get out of here," Jessica said softly, echoing Charlie's thoughts.
Suddenly, Carlton made a small sound of distress. Spasmodically, he grabbed a cardboard box, tipping it over to dump out some of the contents, and vomited into it. His stomach was empty. He retched futilely, his guts clenching and seizing to no effect. At last he sat back, gasping. His face was red, and there were tears in his eyes.
"Carlton, are you okay?"
John asked, alarmed.
"Yeah, never better,"
Carlton said as his breathing returned slowly to normal.
"You have a concussion," Charlie said. "Look at me."
She knelt down in front of him and looked at his eyes, trying to remember what the pupils were supposed to look like if someone had a concussion. Carlton waggled his eyebrows.
"Oh, ow!"
He ground his teeth and ducked his head, clutching it as if someone might try to take it away from him.
Sorry,
he said after a moment, still bent over in pain.
I think it was all that running. I'll be okay.
But, Charlie started to protest, but he cut her off, straightening with a visible effort.
Charlie, it's fine. Can you blame me for being a little out of sorts? What about you?
He pointed at her arm, and she looked down, confused. There was a small, bright red patch leaking through the bandage on her arm. The wound must have opened while they were fleeing.
Oh,
Charlie said, suddenly a little nauseated herself. John moved toward her to help, but she waved him away.
I'm fine, she said.
She moved the arm experimentally. It ached with the same dull pain that had been radiating through it for the last few days, but it did not seem worse, and the spot of blood wasn't growing very fast. There was another rumble of thunder outside, and the walls trembled.
We have to get out of here. Not out of this room, out of this building, Jessica exclaimed.
Carlton needs a doctor, John added.
Jessica's voice rose in pitch, sounding frantic.
We're all going to need a doctor if we don't leave.
I know, Charlie said.
She felt a rising irritation at the self-evident statement, and she tried to tamp it down. They were scared, and they were trapped. Sniping at one another would not help.
Okay, she said. You're right. We need to get out. We could try the skylight.
I don't think we'll be able to get out that way, John said.
There's got to be a ladder in this place somewhere,
Charlie replied, her fear receding as she considered the options. She sat up straighter, gathering herself together.
It won't help, Jessica said.
Air vents, John said hastily. The ones Jason got in through were too small. There have to be others. Windows. Freddy's had windows, right? They have to lead somewhere.
I think it's safe to say that they've all been bricked up. Charlie shook her head and looked at the floor for a moment. Then she met John's eyes.
This whole place has been sealed.
The walkie-talkie crackled to life, and they all jumped. Lamar's voice came over the radio.
John?
John grabbed the radio.
Yeah? Yeah, I'm here, and I'm with Charlie, Jessica, and Carlton. We're in an office.
Good,
Lamar said.
Listen.
There was a brief scrabbling noise, then Marla's voice came through.
Good, she said. Listen, I'm looking at the monitors, and it looks like all the robots are on the main stage again.
What about Pirate's Cove? Charlie put in, leaning over John to talk into the receiver.
Is Foxy there, too?
There was a brief pause.
The curtain is closed, Marla said.
Marla, is everything okay? Charlie said.
Yeah,
she answered shortly, and the background static vanished abruptly. She had turned the walkie-talkie off. Charlie and John exchanged a glance.
Something's wrong, Carlton said. Other than the obvious, I mean.
He gestured in a vague circular motion, indicating everything around them.
What are you talking about?
Jessica was losing her patience.
With Marla, I mean, he said. Something's wrong. Call her back.
John pressed the call button again.
Marla, what's going on?
There was no reply for a long minute. Then Lamar replied.
We don't know where Jason is.
His voice began to break.
He's in danger.
Charlie felt a jolt through her stomach.
No.
She heard John take a deep breath. There was a shuddering sound from the other end of the radio. Marla was crying. She started to speak, broke off, and tried again.
Foxy,
she said, her voice a little loud as she forced the words out.
Foxy took him.
Foxy?
Charlie said carefully. The figure standing in the front hallway, the rain whipping past it, the silver eyes burning in the dark. She took the walkie-talkie from John's hand. He gave it up without protest.
Marla, listen. We're going to find him.
Do you hear me? Her bravado echoed emptily, even in her own ears. The walkie-talkie made no sound. Agitated, needing to move, to do something, Charlie turned to the others.
I'm going to check out the skylight one more time, she said. Jessica, come with me. You've got the best chance of fitting.
Right,
Jessica said reluctantly, but she got to her feet.
You shouldn't go alone, John said, standing to go with them.
Charlie shook her head.
Someone has to stay with him, she said, gesturing at Carlton.
Hey, I'm a big boy. I can stay by myself, Carlton said, speaking to a shelf.
Nobody is staying by themselves, Charlie said firmly.
John gave her a brief, precise nod, something just short of a salute, and she returned it. She looked back at Carlton, whose face was drawn, tight with pain.
Don't let him fall asleep, she told John in a low voice.
I know,
he whispered.
I can hear you, you know,
Carlton said, but his voice was flat and fatigued.
Come on, Jessica said.
Charlie shut the door behind them and heard John slip the lock back into place. Charlie led the way. The closet with the skylight wasn't far, and they crept down the hallway and through the doors without incident.
The skylight. Look, there's no way to climb out through it, even for me. To get to the roof, I would have to put all my weight on the glass. It would break. Even if we had a ladder, this isn't the way out, Jessica said.
We could take the skylight window off, Charlie suggested weakly.
I guess we could break out all the glass, but that just brings us back to the ladder question. We need to look around.
A sudden knock on the door caught John's attention, and he sprang to his feet and listened carefully. Charlie knocked again, briefly regretting that they had not come up with some sort of signal.
It's me, she called softly,
and the lock slid back. John looked worried.
What is it?
Charlie said, and he cast his eyes in Carlton's direction. Carlton was huddled on the floor, his knees drawn up tight to his chest, and his arms were wrapped oddly around his head. Charlie knelt down beside him.
Carlton, she said, and he made a small whimper.
She put a hand on his shoulder, and he leaned into her a little.
Charlie, sorry about all this, he whispered.
Shh, tell me what's going on, she said.
She had a sick feeling of dread. Something was really wrong, and she did not know how much was his injury, and how much was just exhaustion, pain, and terror.
You're going to be okay, she said, stroking his back and hoping it was true.
After a long moment, he pushed at her, and she drew back, slightly hurt, until she saw him pitch forward over the cardboard box, retching again. She looked up at John.
He needs a doctor, he said in a low voice, and she nodded.
Carlton sat up again and wiped his face with his sleeve.
It's not that bad. I'm just so tired.
You can't go to sleep, Charlie said.
I know, I won't. But I didn't sleep last night, and I haven't eaten since yesterday. It just makes everything worse. I had a bad moment, but I'm okay.
Charlie looked at him dubiously, but did not argue.
Now what? Jessica said.
Charlie didn't answer right away, even though she knew the question was for her. She was picturing the guard, his eyes rolling back in his head as he collapsed, his thin face going slack as he fell. They needed answers, and he was the one who had them.
Now let's hope I didn't accidentally kill that guard, Charlie said. I don't want to go back out there, Jessica said. We have to go back to where I found Carlton.
Hang on, said John, pulling out the radio again. Hey, Marla, are you there?
There was a blip of static. Then Marla's voice.
Yeah, we're here.
We need to get to the supply room. It's off the main dining room, past the stage. Can you see the area?
There was a pause as Marla searched her screens. I can see most of it. Where are you? I can't see you.
We're in an office. It's...
John looked at Charlie for help, and she took the radio.
Marla, do you see another hall leading from the main room? Sort of the same direction as the closet, but next to it?
What? There are too many hallways.
Hang on. Can you see this?
Over the protests of the others, Charlie opened the office door and poked her head out cautiously. When she saw that the space was clear, or at least she was fairly sure it was clear, she stepped out into the open, looked up, and waved. There was nothing but a quiet, steady static from the walkie-talkie. Then Marla's voice came through, excited.
I see you! Charlie, I can see you!
Charlie ducked back into the little room, and Jessica caught the door and shut it behind her, double and triple checking the lock.
Okay, Marla, Charlie said. Follow the cameras. You can see that hall. Can you see the main dining room?
Yes, she said instantly.
Most of it. I can see the stage and the area around it, and I can see the second hallway, the one parallel to yours.
Can you see the door at the end?
Yes, but Charlie, I can't see into the supply room.
We'll just have to take our chances with what's in there, Charlie answered.
Marla, she said into the receiver, are we clear to get to the dining room?
Yes, Marla said after a moment.
I think so.
Charlie took the lead, and all four of them made their way slowly down the hall. Jessica hung back a little with Carlton, staying so close to him he almost tripped over her feet.
Jessica, I'm fine, he said.
I know,
she said quietly, but she did not move away, and he did not protest again. When they reached the end of the hallway, they stopped.
Marla?
Charlie said into the radio.
Go ahead.
No, stop! She cried, and they froze, pressing their bodies up against the walls as if it might make them invisible. Marla whispered over the walkie-talkie, her hushed tones distorting her voice even more.
Something? Stay quiet.
She said something else, but it was unintelligible. Charlie craned her neck to see out into the room and what might be lurking there, some murky form, lumbering heavily in the shadows, poised to attack. There was a long rumble outside, and the panels on the ceiling rattled as if they were about to fall.
Marla, I don't see anything,
Charlie said into the walkie-talkie. She looked at the stage, where all of the animatronics were still in position, staring sightlessly into the distance.
Me neither, John whispered.
Sorry, Marla said. Not to overstate the obvious, but it's creepy in here. It feels like it's been midnight for hours. Does anyone know what time it is?
Charlie checked her watch, squinting to see the little hand.
It's almost 4, she said.
A.M. or P.M., Marla said. She didn't sound like she was joking.
P.M.
Lamar's voice came over the radio, hard to hear, like he was not close enough to the receiver.
I told you, Marla, it's daytime.
It doesn't feel like daytime,
Marla sobbed, shrieking as the building shook with a crash of thunder.
I know, he said softly,
and the radio clicked off. Charlie looked at the walkie-talkie for a moment with a sense of emptiness. It was like hanging up the phone, knowing the person on the other end was still there, but feeling a loss anyway, as if they might be gone for good.
Charlie, John said, and she looked at him.
He cast a nod back at Carlton, who was leaning against the wall, his eyes closed. Jessica was hovering worriedly, not sure what to do.
We have to get him out of here, John said.
I know, Charlie said. Come on, that guard is our best chance of getting out alive.
With one more look at the open space in front of them, she led them out into the main room. Crossing in front of the stage, she saw John and Jessica glancing upward, but she refused to look at the animals, as if that would stop them from looking at her. It did not help. She felt their eyes on her, taking her measure, waiting for their moment. Finally, she could not stand it. She snapped her head around to look as they passed. She saw only the inanimate robots, their eyes fixed on something that no one else could see. They paused again at a hall entrance, waiting for Marla to guide them, and after an anxious moment, her voice came over the radio, calm again.
"Go ahead. The hall is clear."
They went. They were almost there, and Charlie felt a tightness in her stomach like a living knot, something snake-like that was fighting to be free. She thought of Carlton, retching on the floor of the office, and she felt for a moment like she might do the same. She stopped a few feet from the door, holding up a hand.
"I don't know if he's in there," she said in a low voice. "And if he is, I don't know if he's awake. Now let's hope I didn't accidentally kill that guard," she had said. She was only kidding, but now the words came back, unsettling her. It had not really occurred to her that he might be dead until the words were out of her mouth, and now, as she stood in the hall, about to find out, the idea took hold. As if he knew what she was thinking, John said,
"Charlie, we have to go in."
She nodded. John moved as if to take the lead, but she shook her head. Whatever was in there, it was her doing, her responsibility. She closed her eyes for a brief moment, then turned the knob. He was dead. He was lying on the floor, on his back, his eyes closed and his face ashen. She felt herself put a hand over her mouth, but it was as if someone else were moving her body. She felt numb, the knots in her stomach gone still and dead. John pushed past her. He knelt and slapped the man's face.
"John,"
she said, hearing a note of panic in her voice. He looked up at her, surprised.
"He's not dead," he said. "He's just out cold. He can't tell us anything like this."
"We have to tie him up or something," Jessica said. "Don't wake him up like this."
"Yeah, gotta agree with that," Carlton said.
His eyes searched the room for devices, tools, or costumes, anything that Dave could, and probably would, use against them, given the opportunity. Charlie just stared, the numb feeling lingering.
"He's not dead."
She shook herself all over like a dog, trying to rid herself of the remnants of shock, and cleared her throat.
"Let's find something to tie him up with," she said. "This place seems to have everything."
Jessica headed to the back of the room, where costume pieces were piled haphazardly, empty mascots' heads staring out from odd angles with ghastly eyes.
"Careful touching the costumes," Charlie called toward Jessica.
"We could always put him in one of them, like he did to me," Carlton said.
There was an uncharacteristic edge to his voice, something hard and painful. Charlie didn't think it was from his injury. He sat down on a box, his face strained and his arms wrapped around his body like he was holding himself together. Suddenly, Carlton's face lit up with alarm.
"Don't touch!"
he shouted and pushed Charlie out of the way. He stumbled past Jessica, who was searching through the clutter, and started tearing his way through the mess, picking up boxes and pushing things out of his way, scrambling in a desperate search.
"Charlie, where is it?"
he demanded, his gaze roaming around the room futilely. Charlie went to him, following where he looked, and realized what was missing. The yellow bear suit that had been slouched in the corner.
"What?"
John said, confused.
"Charlie, where is it? Where is Michael?"
Carlton sat with a thud on a cardboard box that sagged a little but held his weight. He was only looking at Charlie, as if they were the only people in the room.
"Michael?" John whispered.
He looked at Charlie, but she returned his gaze silently. She had no answers to offer him.
"Michael was there."
Carlton pressed his lips firmly, rocking himself back and forth.
"I believe you,"
Charlie answered calmly, her voice quiet. John put his hands on his knees and let out a breath.
I'm going to go help Jessica, he muttered, and stood up with resignation.